Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Team Sideline Podcast, the podcast dedicated to hosting meaningful conversations surrounding the unique challenges of sidelined athletes. This podcast is hosted by Sidelined USA, a nonprofit organization serving, resourcing, and advocating for sidelined student athletes nationwide. In today's episode, we'll be discussing an important topic that affects all athletes at some point, the transition from sports to the next chapter of their lives. Joining us today to discuss this topic is Taj Deshaun, a former college football player, now author, speaker, and athlete transition coach. Taj has a passion for helping athletes navigate the challenges of transitioning from sports and finding their purpose in life beyond the field or court. Taj has worked with numerous athletes to help them overcome the fear, frustration, and uncertainty associated with life post-athletics. Taj shares his insights on how athletes can thrive in life after sports, navigate the transition process, and cultivate clarity and purpose for what comes next. We'll discuss common challenges athletes face during the transition period, including feeling lost, lacking direction, and struggling to find their identity beyond their sport. Taj provides practical advice and strategies for how athletes can overcome these challenges and build a fulfilling and successful life beyond sports. Whether you're an athlete going through this transition process yourself, or you're a coach, parent, or friend looking to support someone in this situation, this episode is for you. So let's dive in and learn from Taj Deshaun about how to thrive in life after sports. Taj, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here today. Really happy to have you on. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about your background as an athlete and what you do currently.
Yes. First of all, Christine, I have to say thank you for having me. Before I get into my bio and I don't get a chance to do this, thank you for having me. Thank you for the work that you're doing. I really enjoy getting to know you over the past, I don't know, it's been a few weeks since we really connected. And I know nothing but good things are going to come from this. So thank you. Excited to be here today. So I played football at Stony Brook University out there on Long Island. What I do now is help former athletes, current athletes in a sense too, but mainly former athletes coming out of college. But I've also worked with some former professional and Olympic athletes as well. And I help them thrive after sports. That comes from the principle of not just surviving, which a lot of us do after we're done playing. We just try to survive and find a job to pay bills so we can say we're adulting or feel like, hey, I'm doing something now, at least I have a job. And the principle of thrive after sports comes from thriving and being able to find something that you can attach your identity and your mission to the same way you did with your sport. You can pursue whatever this new thing is with that same tenacity. And I've really found a passion over the past five, almost 6 years of helping athletes do that. So that's what I do in a nutshell. I have a podcast and books and all that stuff, which we'll get into, but that's the core of everything that I do.
That is awesome. And it's exactly why I wanted you on our show. Normally, our listeners are sidelined athletes, right? Athletes who are either sidelined temporarily or permanently. But, you know, in our space, a lot of the questions we have and the transition that we're talking about is purely just athletic retirement in general. And so today's podcast, we just want to really expand our audience a little bit and speak to anybody who's retired and kind of trying to figure it out what's next. Certainly for those who had a medically forced retirement, there's additional layers there. But I think there's so much to just glean from your experience working with athletes as well as your own background in athletic retirement. Tell us a little bit about your own athletic retirement. How did that go for you? Did you feel like you were prepared for that? What were your pitfalls? What were your triumphs? That kind of thing.
There were a lot of pitfalls, definitely more pitfalls than triumphs. The triumphs are more of a recent thing in my life, but that's actually why I reached out to you, because I had been following Sideline and reading the articles and, you know, some of the things that you've been doing. And I just decided to reach out to you one day, or because I realized the parallels between being injured or, you know, transitioning out just because your career is over. Either way, it's involuntary, you know, and you feel like you're being forced out or like the game is done with you. And it's a traumatic experience. So I've worked with athletes who are injured and their career ends because they have an injury. And even the athletes who just, hey, your time's up, your eligibility's up, you're not good enough to make it professionally, or you're not good enough to get your contract renewed in the pros. It's the same experience. You know, for me, my career didn't end because of an injury. It ended because I wasn't good enough to make it to the NFL. And that really hit me hard because, you know, most athletes' dream, of course, is when you get a scholarship, you just automatically assumed, wow, I'm the best thing since sliced bread. I'm for sure going to the pros now. I just have to do my time in college and I'll go to the next level or to the Olympics or, you know, whatever sport you play. But I was really devastated when I came back home, because not only did I not have the college career that I envisioned for myself, and I was, you know, plagued with injuries throughout, and then just didn't have the best career even when I was healthy, to be totally honest. So I felt like I failed in my career. And then I also felt like a failure just in general, because I didn't make it to the league. I was grateful that my parents didn't have to come out of pocket, very still to this day, grateful to have that experience in college, living in another state, and also having my education paid for. But my ultimate goal was to be able to provide and take care of, you know, my family and give back to them for all the things they gave to me. So that led me into a really, when you talk about the pitfalls, it was, I didn't do enough work, not only during my career to figure out who I wanted to be or who I was outside of football, but at the beginning of coming back home, excuse me, when football was over, I didn't do enough work to start to put those pieces together, because I didn't know how. And I was completely unprepared for what was waiting for me on the other side of graduation, which was, what do I do now? I don't even know who I am. I don't even know how to put a resume together. I know I need to make some money and get a job, but I don't know what type of job I want. I don't know anything about anything except football. So that led me down a really dark spiral of just isolation and drinking and a lot of partying, just because it helped me escape from what I was going through. I just kind of continued my college life. Like, I was just out drinking Thursday through Friday, and it was a really dark time in my life. And I know a lot of athletes go through it, and I didn't realize that this was a common thing at the time. You know, when you're going through it, that's why I'm grateful for organizations like yours and other people who talk about athlete transition and athlete mental health, because now athletes don't have to feel like they're alone. I thought I was the only one. I thought something was wrong with me, you know? So yeah. I'll just leave it there.
Yeah. And I think that's so true. And sadly, you know, we hear that all the time. You know, athletes are not prepared to see themselves as worthy and, you know, having transferable skills that are in demand. B, things like just simple skills. I mean, different colleges and universities do it differently. Some are kind of more aware, but now I'm doing a better job. But for the most part, I'm not hearing stories of, oh yeah, like I learned how, you know, my team, you know, they took the time to teach me how to, you know, think of myself as more than an athlete and to, you know, prepare for the future. I mean, it's like that moment where you're just kind of dropped into the real world and expected to know what the heck you're doing. And I don't know why that is. And, you know, a college is supposed to prepare you for the next thing. And it seems like for some reason we are missing it in the college and universities on that grand scale, but particularly for athletes whose time is so consumed by the sport itself that it's not like you are getting other jobs and doing the interviews and, you know, things like that on a smaller scale. And so then, you know, athletes can feel just completely intimidated and underqualified to do things that they are very qualified to do if they just have the skill set, you know, and so that's its own kind of learning process. So one of the things you mentioned was feeling like this lack of purpose, of like lostness, and just kind of numbing out, like a kind of just distracting yourself from having to deal with those feelings. So in that, you know, you mentioned identity and thinking about yourself, like, who am I now? And, you know, a lot of athletes do come out of their athletic careers trying to figure out that question of who am I that I'm now that I'm not a, for you, football player, for them, whatever sport it is. So tell us about your kind of struggle with that question and kind of looking back on it now, what perspective you have on the idea of identity and the who am I now question.
Yeah, I think I want to go back to what you said a moment ago about feeling underqualified. I think the problem is, I think what the majority of us do, me included, is what I did was I came out and I was like, okay, I need to get my life together. I need to find a job. And so what that is, and what I did, is I started externally looking to fill an internal void without doing any sort of reflection or spending time thinking about what I want. And I use this phrase, and you know, people who know me have heard me say this time and time again, but I really believe in it. I always say that you have to try to think about how you want to live, because that's more important than what you want to do. And you can always fit what you want to do under the umbrella of, this is how I want to live. You know, like, everything happens for a reason. But at the same time, if I would have realized that, and I learned through experience, which is what led me here to doing this work, but I knew coming out of college that I didn't want to like sit in a cubicle all day. I knew that I didn't like driving in traffic, but yet for 5 years until I started doing this work 5 years ago, those are the jobs that I was working in. And so I think, but this is important to say too, before you even get to that point of trying to figure out what you want to do next or who you want to become, there has to be a healing that takes place. So I never start working with someone because I know if someone would have come to me and been like, hey, Taj, what do you want to do? I would have felt this like, you know, pit in my stomach. I would have been anxious about it. I remember even like a year or two removed from college when I wasn't working or still just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. Even going to like family event, like I used to dread the holidays because it's Thanksgiving. So what are you up to now that, you know, you're done playing football, Taj? Mm-hmm. I have no idea. So this is so really awkward right now.
Relatable. So many athletes right now are nodding their heads and thinking, oh, not just me. Keep going.
Yes. Yeah. So I bring that up to say that there has to be this almost healing that takes place first, you know, the loss of your sport before you can get to this place where you realize, okay, you played for 10, 15, 20, however many years of your life. Now it's time to realize that you have the rest of your life ahead of you. And it comes back to what I said earlier, which is it's not about who you are now. It's about who you want to become. And if you can make that slight little shift in focus to be like, who do I want to become? Then things actually become fun. And you can be like, well, all I have to do is create it. Then you start internally. That's what I did. Well, not right away. It took me some time to get there, which is why I try to save people time now. You don't just go on a job board and see what you can get or what you're qualified for, you know, but start internally and think about what you want your life to look like long term and start putting the pieces together. Even if you have to get, you know, some sort of job temporarily, at least you know where you're going and what your North Star is. So you can, it'll keep you motivated even if you're not working somewhere or doing something that is, you know, ultimately aligned with you. It'll keep you motivated because you know that it's only temporary and you're clear about where you're going, which takes work, you know?
Right. Yeah. I think that's a really interesting shift, this shifting of the question of who am I now to who do I want to become? So let's say there's an athlete listening who's like, okay, that sounds good, but what if I truly don't know who I want to become? Do you have any tips for ways that they can, I don't know, expose themselves to different types of things that might help them along that journey? Because that is a journey, right? You're not going to like sit down in one night and figure out who do I want to become? So talk about that journey a little bit, maybe from your own personal experience or working with your athletes.
Yes. So my personal experience was trial and error. And so one of my things that I say a lot now is that, you know, intentional action is a lot better than trial and error. So that's kind of what I'm focused on helping people with, because for me, it was, I'll tell you very quickly my evolution and then I'll get into advice that I have. So I started in sales because people were telling me, hey, I know you're unemployed right now. You don't know what you want to do, but sales jobs are always hiring. They love hiring athletes. So I'm like, okay, cool. I'll just get a sales job. No sort of like thought went into what type of industry, what does the role look like? What's my long-term goal? It's just like, hey, I heard sales jobs are hiring. So let me see if I can go get a check. So I started in sales, was making great money because yes, I am a competitor, just like all athletes are, but I felt burned out and I felt empty. And there was just like, I'm only doing this for money. That caused me to make a pivot into recruiting because I was like, well, I can still put up placement numbers and make good money as a recruiter, but also I'm helping people. And I started having so much success in that area that I won't get into all the details, but that's what ultimately led me to doing this work. So, but what I tell people now is that when it comes to finding clarity, it takes work. You know, sometimes people will hear about what I do because they heard me on a podcast or they see some content and they'll schedule time to speak with me and they'll say, hey, can you help me? I know we only have like a 30-minute call, but can you help me figure out what I'm supposed to do? And I always gently remind them that, you know, I don't have a crystal ball. I just met you 5 minutes ago. This is going to take work, not just me, but it's going to take work on your part because clarity has to be cultivated. It takes time. I wish someone would have told me that. You're not just going to be walking down the street one day and then the clouds are going to part. It's going to be like, you're supposed to do this. Like you have to spend time, reflect, think about it, study other people who are doing different things. That was a big one for me. I started looking at, this guy's a coach and he's self-employed and he works from home. And this was like 2017 before the pandemic. So I'm like, well, maybe I could do something like that. And maybe I can help athletes. So, and I know I'm getting long-winded on you, Christine.
No, keep going. You're good.
This is the last thing I'll say. When you're at a point where you don't necessarily know what you want to do. I have a very simple formula that I think can get the ball rolling, or at least start to point you in the right direction. It's called who, what, and how. So you think about who you want to serve, what you want to serve them with, meaning like, you know, so for me, who is former athletes? The what is helping them through their transition out of their sport. The how is through one-on-one coaching, group coaching, books, podcasts, speaking, you know. And so the who, what, how formula, and, you know, you can have multiple different things, you know, like at under your who category, there might be like five different groups of people that you want to help. That's good. And figure out the what you want to help them with and then how you want to help them. And that will lead you into not only how you can make an impact, but how you can find, you know, the type of lifestyle that you want to live while making that impact. So, yeah, I can go on and on, but I'm just leaving.
And you definitely should, because I think when you, I think you're freestyling and it's really, really helpful. So don't feel like you need to cut yourself short. Yeah, I like what you said about cultivating clarity. I haven't heard it put in those words before, but this is something that in different terms I have thought a lot about. And that is sometimes clarity, like the long-term clarity for like where your life is going, like what you're supposed to be doing, like what's next, is elusive, right? It just feels like, holy smokes, I don't know. And so I started thinking in terms of like, what would clarity for the day look like? And leaning into clarity for the day, like maybe I don't know the end game, but what today can I do to, and I think this is cultivating clarity, but what should I be doing today to make some steps towards what it would take to find that out? And so I think that is a really helpful way of saying it, and that cultivation of clarity. So thank you for that. I know one of the things you just kind of mentioned was this idea of others and helping others. And I know in your book, you talked about the importance of thinking about others and not just yourself in this process. Like some of us might think it makes sense to figure everything out for ourselves and then think about what we can do for others, which, you know, there may be a time and a place for that, right? It's like, if you need an income right now, well then yeah, that's probably what you need to be focused on primarily until you have that so you can sustain life and do what you need to do. But can you talk about how both cultivating your own vision, you know, kind of learn your own path and figure things out for yourself, and helping others and not just focusing on yourself? Like how can those play together to kind of help each other and to build, even helping you build towards figuring things out of what you want to do next?
That's a great question. I think that, and by the way, I love what you said about clarity for the day. I think that's huge, because you can have, it's like existing in those day tight compartments, and you could be like, all right, my clarity for today is to spend an hour, if I need to go to the park or whatever I need to do, just an hour of quiet time, like brainstorming and thinking about what I want to do. That could be a huge step that could make a world of difference. You can have ideas during that hour that could lead you to, you know, what you're doing for the rest of your life because you looked at it in that day tight compartment. So, but anyway, I don't want to skip past that because I thought that was really good.
Thanks.
Clarity for the day. To answer your question, I think the two are connected. I think you can do both. And I'm going to tell you how. Like as an example, I know it's easy to be like, well, how am I supposed to focus on helping others if I don't even know what I want, or I don't have an income right now? And what I'm saying is figuring out a way to serve others is ultimately going to be the unlock for how you can help yourself. Because in some way, shape, or form, it doesn't really matter what you do. Like at the end of the day, some people may say like, yeah, that's great, Taj, I want to help people, but I also need money. Well, money comes from people. So like, you're going to have to find a way to serve people, and why not do it in a way that's true to you, and do it in a way that brings you satisfaction and ultimately gives you the type of lifestyle you want, even if you have to take something temporarily. That's what I was saying earlier. So there were times when, you know, I didn't just decide I was going to start Thrive After Sports and just all of a sudden, you know, I'm a millionaire, like, you know, and I'm not a millionaire now. That's not what I'm saying. But my point is, I didn't decide to start Thrive After Sports and then just everything fell in line and I was super successful and I'm living this dream life. It was a lot of hard times, but I had this mission that I was focused on. So there were times where I had to take care of myself, meaning, oh, I'll go get a part-time job and do something to make ends meet. So definitely take care of yourself and figure out the best way to do that, but never lose sight of how you're going to serve others, because that's what will not only bring you ultimate satisfaction, but it will put you into a place where you're doing something that only you can do. And I'm not saying even if you're not an entrepreneur, you don't have, you know, a nonprofit like Sidelined. Like it could be you're working at a job and only you work with your customers the way you do it. All of us are unique and individual. So just figure out what you bring to the table and how you can help people and you'll be just fine.
I love that. Yeah, we're going to be talking about a lot of different kinds of things that you do mention in your book that are things to consider along this path of figuring things out. And I loved that one. I wanted to kind of put that at the beginning because I think that's an important thing that a lot of us can benefit from. It's just like when you think about serving others in some capacity, it's also very motivating. Like it helps you feel like you're doing something good in life, even if you don't necessarily know all the things and have everything figured out. At least you're doing something to think of others and not just yourself. And that can be really gratifying and in ways that can help build up just your tank, you know, because let's face it, like these trying to figure out, you know, your resume and interviews and all of the, you know, job searches and things like that can be a drain on energy and not very motivating. So if we can balance that with not only things that, you know, fulfill those purposes, sure, but also fulfill that inner tank of just feeling like I went above and beyond of someone today, or I was really nice to somebody at the grocery store or whatever, you know, I complimented like an old lady who like probably hasn't been complimented in, you know, who knows how long. And she like ate it up, you know, just simple things even, or, you know, maybe it's mentoring. Maybe it's, you know, there's a neighborhood kid that's interested in your sport. You know that they're interested in your sport. They're doing their thing. Maybe you offer to work with them for an hour a week or something that's not a big time suck, but it just kind of gives you that sense of you're being fruitful with what you've been given. And I think that's a great quality. So thank you for including that in your book and sharing a little bit about that. One of the other things that you mention in the book, spend some time on, is this idea of fueling your mind and body following athletic retirement. This is such an interesting one to me because, I mean, obviously elite athletes have been, you know, they're in this routine. They're a lot of times, you know, your meals are decided for you. Your schedule is decided for you. Your workouts are decided for you. You don't have to do any of that. So then post-retirement, all of a sudden you're making all these things up for yourself, this, your new routines, your new habits. And sometimes that doesn't go, you know, you let loose and like, okay, now I don't have to do all that stuff. I can just like go eat Cheetos and like work out, sure. But you know, if I miss it, whatever. Other people, it's not that, you know, it's the opposite. They really want to, you know, continue the physique. And so they're going to work really hard at it. But like, tell us about how you feel in terms of fueling the mind and body, like how this can help in the transition following sport.
Yes. So it's so funny you bring that up because I was just talking to a friend the other day and we were talking about how we were eating terribly after our careers were over. Like all I was doing was bench pressing and eating Popeyes and fast food.
See,
like,
I called it Cheetos and weightlifting.
And then when that's pretty, it was Popeyes and bench press for me. And then, you know, I was out of shape. I didn't like how I looked. I couldn't even run around the block without getting winded. So I look at it like this. I have all these sayings, which I've thrown a few of them out there already, but I always say that life is your sport now. Ultimately life is always our sport, right? We're playing the game of life. And when it comes to being able to take care of yourself, it is tough because like you said, there's no structure. There's no coach blowing the whistle and making you work out at 6 a.m. You have to become that person for yourself. And I want to be careful with that. I'm not saying that you have to get up at 6 a.m. every day and force yourself to work out. Like you might need to rest. So there's also a balance. You don't have to train the same way you were when you were competing. You just want to focus on being healthy and functional. And this ties into the mind too. Like you were saying, this is a mind body thing. So it's not only what you're feeding your body, but what are you feeding your mind? So I look at it like this, even when you're in the process of cultivating clarity and trying to figure out what you want to do, you have to remember that like that competitive energy needs to go somewhere and you want to use it productively. Like for me, my competitive energy was being out with my friends, seeing who can drink the most. That's not productive. when I shifted it into, let's see how long I can go without drinking. Let's see if I can like hold myself to a workout regimen and get back in shape and go from, you know, not being able to run around the block to being able to run a few miles a day or, you know, hitting the gym and lifting weights a few times a week. So I think if you just approach life as an athlete, and there's going to be a period inevitably where you're going to want to let loose, just like, wait, I don't have to be at practice right now. I don't really have to watch what I eat. Have fun, enjoy it, but don't let it consume you. And we're not just talking about health. Like you said, Christine, this is about your mind too. So you got to be careful what you're reading, what you're watching, what you're listening to as well. And just be kind to yourself and treat yourself. Don't stop treating yourself like an athlete. Just, you know, carry it over into being athletic or having an athlete mindset in everyday life is the way I would sum that up.
Yeah. I really like that because so much of an athlete's background is preparing them for killing life, like just doing a great job with things. But unfortunately, sometimes I feel like there's a stopgap. Like we aren't showing athletes that you are actually more prepared than you think. And I think there's an importance to kind of, like you said, like thinking of your life as sport. It's like you're training for life. So what would training for life look like, you know, following athletic retirement and almost in some ways, starting with becoming your own coach? You know, you kind of like everyone's got to do their own work. I know that's one of the things that you talk about. And I think that's really an important thing to say. Everyone has to put in the work. Mm-hmm. And part of that is starting at the very beginning with kind of like coaching yourself. And then you can employ other tools, you know, getting a life coach or, you know, reading books or following, you know, we'll talk in a little bit about mentors and things like that. But let's talk a little bit about one more aspect of this cultivating vision, which I think is important. Is you said in your book that one of the things that can be helpful in this is asking better questions. Like, do you have examples of better questions that we can be asking ourselves that would maybe drive us forward as good starting points, like maybe a prompt for journaling or something like that?
Yes. Thank you for bringing this up. That's cool. I've never been asked about that before. Just the idea of asking better questions will lead you to better answers. Mm-hmm. So I've actually mentioned a few, you know, during this conversation. Mm-hmm. One example of a great question is not, okay, who am I now? What am I going to do? The better question is, who do I want to become? Totally different mindset, totally mm-hmm. different feeling. When you ask yourself that question, it's a totally different feeling that you get in your body. One is a sense of like being lost, hopeless, despair. The other one is, It's a sense of like inquisitiveness. It's excitement. It's hope about the future. It's optimism. It's possibility. It's all these different things. Another one I said earlier, which, you know, it's not what do I want to do, but how do I want to live? For me, when someone said that to me, I was like, I've never thought about how I want to live before. I was always so focused on what do I want to do? What's going to be when I'm at the, you know, holiday parties or with family, what am I telling them that I'm doing so they'll feel proud of me versus how do I actually want to live is a totally different question to ask yourself. And, you know, another just you made me think of this. I can go on and on with those questions, but I also think it's important to ask questions of the people around you. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a section in my book where in anyone I'm working with, I have them do this too, is to use the people who know you best to ask them, what do they see you not doing, but what do they see you bringing to the world in terms of contribution? Like, mm-hmm. what are your strengths outside of your sport? What are your weaknesses? Not for the sense of like harping on the weaknesses, but so you can be aware of them and maybe look at some areas that you might want to improve. And also, like I said, where do you see yourself making a contribution to the world? And I think that's a powerful question to ask people who you really trust and respect and who know you better than anyone, because they can come up with some things that you may have never thought of. You know, they say it's hard to see the picture when you're in the frame. So if you ask someone and they give you some knowledge, that really helped me. One of the things my mom told me when I asked her that question, how do you envision me making a contribution to the world? She told me, I'll never forget it. She was like, you have the ability to make people really feel heard and understood and listened to. And that's something I never considered that about myself before. And I was like, huh, that's a good point, which ultimately led me to becoming a coach. So that's what I do day in and day out. I'm listening to people, making them feel heard and understood. And, you know, that's one of the ways I make a contribution, because I asked that right question that opened up a door for me.
I really like that idea of asking others as well And I think it might even be helpful to say, hey, I'm going to ask you this question. I don't want you to answer right now. I want to give you some time to think about it. You know, especially it's intimidating to ask, hey, so what do you think of me? Like, you're not trying to pump yourself up, but you're just trying to explore where your gifting might be and how that might lead you to clarity on how you could be fulfilled in you know, whatever's next. And so giving them that space to think about it and then say, hey, I'd love to meet up with you over coffee or whatever and hear your thoughts on how you see. Because I think you might get even better answers if you give people a little more time. Your mom already knows.
Right. Mom
she can talk on the fly most likely. But other people, it might be helpful to do that. One of the other questions that I read in your book that I really loved was, what makes you come alive? Mm. And trying to kind of figure out what sparks that joy. And it sounds like you if for your own personal experience, that conversation with your mom kind of led you to that same thing of like, oh, like that actually feeds me. Do you have any tips or thoughts on that, on any more on that question of what makes you come alive?
Yeah, I think a lot of that will come from self-reflection. You know, of course, the questions definitely help too, the questions that we were just talking about. And I love your idea, by the way, of giving it space. A lot of people do that. Sometimes I'll say, hey, tell them you want to interview them and these are the questions and then come back to it. So like you're spot on with that because they do get better answers when they take the time to let the people they're interviewing breathe a little bit and marinate on the questions. Mm. But I think when you get that feedback from the people that you ask, look for those things that not only you could see yourself doing, but also, you know, I don't want to get it super woo-woo, but into the feelings, you know, like, how does that make you feel? Like for me, when my mom said that, I was like, yeah, and I actually do enjoy doing that, you know, because there's a level of like connectedness, you know, like I'm a connector. So when I'm able to connect with someone, it's like, oh, that makes me feel good because, you know, I feel seen, you feel seen, especially if I'm helping someone, that's very fulfilling. So I think spending a lot of time, I don't have any set questions, but I would say that if you spend time thinking about what you feel most lit up by, and of course, the first thing is going to be your sport, right? That's like what immediately comes to mind. Well, I only feel good when I'm playing my sport. That's not true. There are other things throughout the course of your life that have lit you up. Maybe you just haven't spent a lot of time thinking about those things. So I invite people to just be more observant of their day to day. What's lighting them up, and even reflect on their past, even all the way back to childhood. What are some of those things that you felt really good in those moments or those situations or in those interactions or even by what you were doing? And that'll take you a long way.
Yeah, no, that's really, really good. And I was thinking as you were talking about transferable skills and like, okay, that question of what I really love in life. Well, I really love football. Okay, well, let's peel that back a minute. What did you love about football? What was it that fed you? What was it that gave you that spark? And for a lot of them, it's going to be purely just, well, there's probably a lot of things, right? But how you answer that can give you hints towards what your interests are. For example, you know, I love being competitive. I love, let's say, being part of something bigger than yourself. I love the team aspect. I love performing and goal setting. I love the physicality. I just love to go out there and like hit something. So these are all clues almost, right? If you distill it down, like what did you love about your sport? Distill it down. Those are now clues. So write all those out, right? And think about the kinds of things that employ those characteristics that you enjoy so much. Like being a part of a team is better for you than being on your own, a solo type job. That's a clue. You know, the physicality part, like, is there a way you can incorporate a physicality into either your vocation or a side hustle or whatever it is? For my daughter, for example, she knew she loved medicine for a long time and kind of wanted to be a doctor or a physician's assistant. And then she was realizing she was a rower. And she realized that she just really liked the grittiness of, and likes the grittiness of weight working out in the weight room, particularly and lifting. And so then she kind of combined those ideas and was like, ooh, what if I was a physical therapist where I'm combining my love for medicine along with my love for muscles and like learning all the different movements that are going to impact certain muscles. And if I knew more about that, that would be really exciting to me. So she kind of morphed those together, and that's her path. So anyways, just wanted to add that in because I think that is interesting, like kind of what you said, and it's so important is to look for clues, you know? So
that's I love that you brought that up. That's such a good example. The example you just gave with your daughter, because she spent the time doing that reflection and merged those two worlds. Mm-hmm. And for, you know, I want to encourage people listening that it's not always going to be related to athletics. You know, sometimes I have to tell people like, you only want to be a coach because you're just comfortable being around your sport. They'd be like, yeah, you're right. And then because they haven't spent the time thinking about other things, you know? And so I love that your daughter spent the time to do that because it's merging two passions and it's, you know, ultimately going to be her path. And you made me think of something else too, when you were talking about like, you're looking at what you did during your sport that you enjoy. I have a mentor named Thomas Williams. I call him my mentor. He's like my big bro. He's like 5-6 years older than me. He really took me under his wing when I started doing this transition work, you know, back in the day, or like 2017. Long story short, Thomas played at USC linebacker, and then he played in the NFL for a few different teams. He has a saying. He's like, I never stopped playing football. I just don't tackle people anymore. And then that goes into what you and I were discussing earlier about that life is your sport now. I feel the same way. Like it's every day is film, practice, and game. You know, it's just wrapped up into like one day now. Like this is the game. I'm going to be on this podcast. I have an opportunity to speak with you and share what's on my heart and share what I'm doing. This is game day. But before that, you know, of course, I'm researching your organization. You and I have conversations. Like that's practice. We're still playing. You know what I mean? We just don't play our sport anymore. We're playing the game of life. So I'm gonna get off my soapbox now, but you maybe.
Oh man, I tell you, the soapbox is good. You guys stay on that soapbox. That was brilliant. Completely love that. And I think that can provide such a spark for athletes to understand that it's not like your sport isn't over. It just looks different. Mm. Yes, certain parts of it and the way that it existed was over. But like you said, like there's still game. There's still game. Like, well, just got to find your game.
That's right. Find your game. That's good.
Yeah. One of the tips that you give in your book about, you know, tips in transition, how to thrive after sports, is auditing your circle. I think this is such an important thing. You have a personal backstory about this, a little bit of who you were choosing to hang out with post-graduation and where it was taking you. Can you tell a little bit about that? And then just any tips you have on this idea of auditing your circle?
Yes. So there's that saying, everybody's heard it. You're the combination of the five people you spend the most time with. And that's very true. So for me personally, I had to be very cautious about who I was hanging out with when I moved back home, because there were a lot of people who were in the same exact spot that they were when I went off to college. And some of the things that we used to do together, primarily partying, just things that were, you know, not productive at all. I had to separate myself from that because Not that they're not, I'm still in touch with a lot of them to this day, but there were certain people who weren't ready to snap out of that partying lifestyle. And we're coming up, we're in our early 20s at the time, 23, 24, going on 25. I'm like, 25 is right around the corner for me. I don't want to be in the club anymore. Like, I don't even have a job right now. What am I doing? You know, so I think you have to be very intentional about who you're surrounding yourself with. And what I was starting to say earlier is that we're very fortunate to live in this time where you're not limited to, you know, thanks to technology, you're not limited to who you're there with physically. So like Thomas Williams, who I mentioned is my mentor, I've never met the man in person. Mm-hmm. He's been helping me and mentoring me for 5 years. Anything I need to ask him about speaking or whatever the case may be, I asked him about when I was doing my book. So my point is, and I thought that was important to include in the book because so many of us aren't intentional, and I wasn't intentional about this at first. So many of us aren't intentional about who are we actually getting our information from, not just like people, but like different media sources. Like what kind of music are you listening to? Like I was saying earlier, what kind of thoughts are you having? How are the people around you thinking? What are they doing? Are you guys heading in the same direction, or are you all just kind of, you know, happy with living a mediocre life? But ultimately, like, if you haven't spent the time to figure out what you want, you're not going to be able to discern who you need to be around or who you need to figure out ways to get around. Like me, I reached out to you because I saw what you were doing. And I said, I need to be on Christine's radar. Like, we need to be in the same circle. We need to be working on projects together and building because we have the same mission. So I think if you take that mindset into your life, oh, here's another a sports analogy, right? You're drafting new teammates into your life. You're trying to find new teammates and new mentors. Mm-hmm. I have this thing, you might've seen this in the book. I call it drafting mentors. I think that's important. I'm always on the hunt for people who can help pull me up. And I'm also on the hunt for people who I can run with and collaborate with. So that's what auditing your circle means. It's just auditing your circle.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love what you mentioned mentors, because that was going to be my next question. So good job. But and that can be really transformative. But I think it can be also intimidating, to be honest, of like approaching someone to be a mentor because of, you know, people are busy. You can have a million excuses in the world. Like, that person's too important, or just like they got a family, or they already got their own thing going. Why would they want to invest in me? So talk about how you would help an athlete who is thinking about how to identify a mentor, how to ask for a mentor, and how to move on if that mentor says, or that person says they can't do it, like, and not take it personally.
Ooh, I like that. You covered all the bases right there. So I would start with this. I think before you start reaching out to people who could be potential mentors, you have to have done that reflection work of cultivating clarity, because it does no good. It's one thing for me to reach out to you and to Sideline and say, hey, we have a similar mission. I couldn't have reached out to you if I was fresh out of college and I didn't know what I wanted. It's like, hey, Christine, I don't really know what I'm doing right now, but can you help me? Mm-hmm. We'll help you with what? Right. So you have to know who you are, what you want, and where you want to go. I'm not saying you have to have it all figured out, but have a general idea. Mm-hmm. And then when you reach out to that person, you can even share with them that, hey, I'm trying to figure it out, but I think I may want to do this. Would you be able to help me with that? And so, to your point of like not getting your feelings hurt, you want to have like always be on the hunt. I'm always looking for people who I can connect with and who can be mentors. So always just, you should have like a running list of people that you're going to reach out to. So, you know, if you reach out to 50 people and only one person gets back to you, is willing to talk to you, that's great. Congratulations. Like, mm-hmm. I don't think you should go into it with the expectation. I never expect that anyone's going to respond to me ever. My job is just to plant the seed and put it out there. Mm-hmm. There are people who never respond to me. There are people who respond to me right away. There are people who might respond to me 6 months later or a year later. But I'm always putting stuff out there and I'm detached from the expectation. So you can't have your feelings hurt if you're not expecting someone to get back to you or thinking that they owe you something, because they don't. And then I'd also say, when you reach out, I have a simple formula that I use. You don't just want to say, hey, can you help me? Or, hey, can we talk? Or something simple like that. You lead with a compliment, like tell them why you're reaching out. When I reached out to Thomas, he does a lot of work in the transition space too, more so on the speaking side. I say, hey, Thomas, I watched some of your talks about athlete transition. I really love the work that you're doing. I'm looking to help former athletes as well in the form of coaching. Would you be open to having a conversation? Just, you know, 15 minutes. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I could just use your advice and input. So it's a simple formula of, hey, I like what you're doing. I see what you're doing. I'm looking to do this. Would you be willing to have a conversation? Just a quick call. I don't want to take up too much of your time. And I think if you use that formula and that approach, a lot of people, especially if they're former athletes, I'm not saying they have to be, because I have a lot of non-athlete mentors as well. But if you use that approach, I think you'll get a lot of people reaching out to you. And, you know, you also want to make sure you're prepared when that call comes up. That's a big one. You don't want to be on the call and now this person is giving you their time and you don't even know what you want to ask them or what you could use help with. So, but yeah, beautiful. I think I answered.
I love that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I was thinking about that exact thing, because I think you have to be really mindful that their time is precious, right? Like, everyone's time is really important, especially people who are really successful. And so when you come into it, one of the ways to not feel intimidated is to come into it with maybe just like three strategic questions. And like if they ask me this question, I'm going to be prepared. Like, if they ask you, you know, what can you do to help? Have an idea of what they could do to help. Do your research ahead of time so that you know what your ask is going to be. Because you don't want to ask that on the fly, or be caught in this position where you don't know how to answer that question right. at all, because you haven't thought of it. So what are you going to pick their brain with? You know, don't think in terms of 10 questions, think in terms of like 3 to 5, maybe.
Right.
And then what's your ask of them, your goal going forward? Maybe it's just like, hey, can I have permission to touch back with you as questions, if I have questions that come along as I'm pursuing this on my own? Or maybe the ask is, do you have any connections that you think might be valuable to me that you could help make? Or, you know, just something in those terms of what can you, you don't know what you don't ask, you know? And so if you ask what connections they might have or what availability they might have to be helpful to you going forward, you won't know unless you ask. So
yes,
very good. Well, I've got two more questions for you, Taj. One is just kind of like where people can find you. You know, they're interested maybe in checking out your book, your podcast, your coaching services. Tell us a little bit about where they can find you.
Yes. So I'd say the main thing I always just tell people, just Google Thrive After Sports or just Google my name, Taj Deshaun, because whatever you need will come from that. The website is the main hub. You know, if you go to TajDeshaun.com, the links to the podcast, the books, you know, scheduling calls with me, all of that is on the website, TajDeshaun.com. But I always just tell people like Google Thrive After Sports or Google Taj Deshaun, because then you can kind of pick and choose what you want to jump into. If you want to connect on LinkedIn or Instagram, or you want to check out the books, or you want to listen to the podcast, you know, that's why I have all these different platforms, just as you do, so that there's always a way to meet someone where they're at. But if you reach out to me, I will respond, especially if you told me you heard me on this podcast, or, you know, I'm here to serve. I'm not too big time to respond to someone or, you know, schedule time to speak with them. That's why I do what I do, because I'm looking to help. So reach out to me, check out the podcast. Christine's coming up on the podcast sooner rather than later. If you're listening to this on my show, probably like, you know, a few weeks from now, that episode will be out. So yeah, definitely tune in and subscribe.
Awesome. Well, you made me think of, I have another question. So instead of two questions, I got three left here. So,
Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay. So along the lines of coaching services, I know that some people might be listening and automatically feel like they count themselves out because they don't have the finances for that, let's say. So somebody in that position, I know you and I have talked previous to this, but can you share a little bit about, you do have like something you can kind of pull out of your pocket when necessary. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, I love, thank you for bringing us here, because that is a thing. People will hear me on podcasts and stuff, you hear about what I do, and they'll be like, he probably charges an arm and a leg. I'm not going to reach out to this guy. Mm-hmm. So from the get-go, because I know me, when I needed the most help and everything I do, especially my coaching program, is built around what I needed during that time. And of course, all the things that I've accumulated through my coaching, I've tweaked it and made it better. But what I'm getting at is, I knew I couldn't afford to work with anybody. Like, I didn't have a job when I came out of college. And the majority of athletes don't have a job, or they're in their first job, they're not making much money. So from the get-go, I never wanted to charge athletes directly. When I first started in 2017, I was working with a lot of people for free. And then, you know, I'd had some paying clients, but I always told the clients that could afford to work with me that they were paying it forward by basically allowing me to work with people for free. Now, over time, what I've done is definitely tap into universities. So I'm able to get a lot of sponsorships from universities for athletes who are coming out. But for those who are, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 years removed from college or even from their professional career. So for those athletes or for people who may not be able to afford to work with me directly, I have different sponsorships that I'm able to tap into to get them scholarships. Athlete Soul, founded by Miriam Glez, has been a tremendous partnership. She's a master fundraiser, raising money for athlete mental health and this emerging field of athlete transition. And so I'm blessed to be in a position where I've partnered with her to be able to offer scholarships through the money that she's raising through her organization, where I can get compensated, put food on the you know, table for myself and my family, and also pour back into more services for athletes. But it's 100% free for the athlete. And I'm always looking for, back to, you know, drafting mentors, looking for more people so I can secure more scholarships like that. Like, that's my ultimate goal, is to have like enough scholarships where I can always work with athletes for free, even if they can't afford it. Like, if I have the money sitting around, then why not? Let's do it for free. You have nothing mm-hmm. to lose. Right. So to your point, thank you for bringing that up. I don't want people to feel discouraged or think, and I don't charge for it like a call, because I'm not trying to sell everybody on working with me either. Sometimes I'll do a call with someone and that's all they needed, you know? So,
yeah. Gosh, I love that so much. So thank you for exploring those you know, those avenues to make, take away some of the financial barriers that, that might be there for individuals, because I think that's such important work. So the final question is just take us out with a final thought for athletes who are listening today, who hear a lot of their own story in what we've talked about. You've gotten a ton of good advice, but is there anything just remaining that you'd like to send us out with as a food for thought?
Yes. For all those sideline athletes, or all of you who are going through transition right now, just honor where you've been, meaning celebrate your career. You made it to an elite level for a reason. I think a lot of us overlook it and we're so focused on, well, my career's over and I failed and everything sucks now. I was that person. So I want to invite you to just celebrate where you've been. Like, you played at an elite level. You did the thing. You got a scholarship. You played professionally, whatever the case may be, you did it. So celebrate that and honor that. And then also just remember that, like I said earlier, you have the rest of your life ahead of you. So the sooner, I'm not saying don't go through your grieving process. You definitely need to do that and heal and recover from that. But the sooner you can get into the mode of, okay, I have another 60, 70, 80 years of life ahead of me. Let me just focus on that part of it and get excited about what I can create in that chapter of my life now that the athletic chapter is closed. And also remember that you're a role model. Christine, you know, I talked about this in my book. People are watching you, not just your younger siblings or nieces or nephews. It's people who are older than you sometimes are looking at you being like, hey, this guy or girl played at this school or they played for this professional team. I wonder what they're going to do now. So you have the opportunity to show them what it looks like, you know, to be successful when you're done playing your sport. So take that very seriously and, you know, do something that's going to continue to inspire people the way you inspired them when you were playing.
I love it. Game on. Let's go.
Let's go.
Oh, thank you for that. That's several good final words. So I definitely appreciate you sending us out strong and motivated and hopeful of what's possible, because yes, there's something to grieve, something to let go of, and grieving is part of that, but there's also something to build towards. Even if you don't know what that is yet, like, there is a path. It's just, you know, like, follow the breadcrumbs and lay those breadcrumbs out for yourself so that you can make some path forward. One of the things that you said, and this will wrap it up, but one of the things that you and I talked about is in our pre-interview that you said that just kind of came out of your mouth was aimless progress is better than no progress at all. And it's like, even right. If you don't know, it's just like, keep moving forward and lay the breadcrumbs out for yourself. Even if you don't know where you're leading yourself towards, that can be figured out in time, but just movement forward is going to help you get to those answers.
Yes. Christine, thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. I'm really excited for me to be in the interviewer seat and for me to interview you. I think that's going to be really cool. So definitely looking forward to that. Everybody, yes. Stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Taj. Take
thank
care.
Thank you. Hey, so if you made it to the end of this episode, first of all, thank you for tuning in. For those of you guys who are here for the first time, welcome. Please like the video if you're watching on YouTube and subscribe to this channel. I have a lot more great interviews coming up. I think you'll really be surprised with some of the guests that I have and some of the stories that they have to share. This is important work. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, please just leave a 5-star review, subscribe, and share this episode or any other episodes out with someone who needs to hear it. I am on a mission to help as many athletes transition out of their sport and have successful lives after their careers, and not just survive, but thrive in everything that they do. And you guys know I do that in a myriad of ways. It's not just the podcast, it's not just the books, but I do offer coaching as well. I want to encourage you guys to go back and look at some of the testimonials of former athletes that I've worked with to help them through their transitions. Guys, don't hesitate to reach out. Visit TajDeshawn.com. That's where you can find all the free resources, not just the podcast and the books, but access to me. You can schedule a free call with me. I'm not going to get on that call and try to sell you on buying a group program. I have a ton of free access and scholarships for athletes to work with me. So utilize those resources, guys. And last but not least, I definitely want to encourage you guys to grab my first book, Thrive After Sports. You can just go on Amazon, type in Taj Deshawn. I have multiple books on there, but I always try to point people to Thrive After Sports just because I think that's the book that I look at as the most impactful that can help an athlete through the transition. I know a lot of people have read that book and been helped through the transition without ever having to speak to me or even listening to my podcast. And I just got this recording today that I wanted to share with you guys from my guy, Benjamin Van Buren. He's a soccer player, former soccer player at Mercy College, went on to play professional soccer and just recently retired. And he read my book
while he was playing, but then read it again after he retired. And this is what he had to say about it. I love you guys. I'll see you on the next episode. Peace. And here's Ben.
Yo, Taj, it's Ben from Athlete Mentor. Just want to let you know, obviously your book came in and I read it a while ago when I was still in season, and it didn't really hit me then. I was like, yeah, cool, it's a great book, whatever. And then I went to Spain and I was playing for a team over there, and then I left because my grandmother was sick, so I came home, and now it's hitting me. So I read it again. Dude, that thing is phenomenal. Like, if you could put this audio on a case study on your website, I would do it, because it's crazy how, like, the skills and attributes that student athletes have just go missing. And it's like, yeah, you're playing sports, you have all this adrenaline, all this hype about you, all you're working out all the time, you feel good, and then out of nowhere it's like, oh cool, I'm done. You know, like, I know nothing to work for really. So then you get into sales, you get into other things, and you find something that you want to build for yourself, and that's what you get that excitement and that adrenaline from again. So yeah, man, I just want to let you know that I read it again, and it really hit me now that I'm kind of officially retired as a player. But, yeah, that's all I wanted to say, man. I hope you're doing well. Hope you're living the life. I'm actually on Long Island now. I'm going to go to Stony Brook basketball game, so at your alma mater. But, yeah, dude, phenomenal work, and let's obviously stay in touch and maybe get on a call soon. Talk to you later. Peace.